All right, SI Boxing Podcast, and it is not overstating it to say this is one of my favorite episodes. We are down in Dallas, Texas, the site of Canelo Alvarez against Billy Joe Saunders' super middleweight unification fight. Dan Rafael, the longtime boxing writer, now working over at RingTV.com, Ring Magazine, he is with me to go through all the news from the Andy Ruiz fight last weekend to everything you could possibly want to know about Canelo Saunders. After that, Roy Jones Jr., the future Boxing Hall of Famer. That is a great conversation with Roy from his days at his peak in the 1990s. We talk about the 1988 Olympics. We talk about the state of boxing today. And of course, we get into Canelo and Saunders. Really fun conversation with the great Roy Jones. As always, best way to support this podcast, get over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to the show.
Ever been ringside and got blood on you?
Oh, all the time.
This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was really embarrassing.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
What is that song about Texas? Deep in the heart of Texas, the stars at night are big and bright. Perry Como, that's who sings that song. Perry Como, Deep in the Heart of Texas. That's where we are right now at the hotel, just a stone's throw from AT&T Stadium, alongside the great Dan Rafael, working for RingTV.com, Ring Magazine this week, longtime boxing writer. Subscribe to his newsletter, which comes out daily, if not more, when big news breaks. Dan, thanks for joining me here, man.
Chris, it's a pleasure to be with you. It's wonderful to be back on the road at a fight. As I wrote in my newsletter, Fight Freaks Unite, on Substack, it's been 14 months since I've been in a fight. Last fight I went to was March 7th, 2020 in Barclays Center, the heavyweight fight between Adam Konacki getting upset by Robert Hellenius. Came home the next day and was supposed to go back to New York the following week to cover Shakur Stevenson's featherweight title defense against Mariaga at the Madison Square Garden Theater, and obviously that did not happen because a few days later it was canceled. And I haven't been to a fight or anywhere outside my home area in 14 months. So, but it's like riding a bike, I guess. I feel like I've never left. I'm happy to be here.
Not just a fight.
A big fight.
The biggest fight, at least in terms of indoor attendance. We were just sitting in the lobby with Eddie Hearn, who says that this will be the most attended indoor event in boxing history. More than 65,000 fans coming through the turnstiles at AT&T Stadium. What do you think of that? I mean, we are kind of still in the middle of a pandemic here.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's quite amazing. It's quite shocking. And, you know, the point that Eddie made to me before, he said that, you know, they said that this morning they had surpassed the record for United States indoor boxing attendance, which was 63,300 and change, that attended the second fight between Muhammad Ali and Leon Spinks that took place at the New Orleans Superdome in 1978. And now that before that, he figured it was going to surpass that. He said, you know what? Boxing did this. This is not, you know, not only is it a record-breaking crowd for American indoor attendance, you know, assuming that the numbers he's saying to us are accurate, it's the largest gathering anywhere in North America, to my knowledge, for anything, sports or otherwise, since the pandemic. I mean, it'll get broken, you know, as things open up, probably with the Indianapolis 500 that comes up later in the month. But that's pretty impressive when you consider that the thing that would able to draw that magnitude of a crowd is a boxing match. And by the way, even as popular as Canelo Alvarez may be, you know, Billy Joe Saunders, to the 60-plus thousand that are going to be in that arena, they don't know him from you or me. They maybe know he's a good fighter. He's got a title. He's undefeated. But they don't know anything about Billy Joe Saunders. They're coming because it's the Canelo show.
No question.
And I think it's amazing that they can draw that many, you know, given the circumstances of the times. We were just saying, Eddie, like, you know, what the biggest crowds that we've been in. I mean, you and I were there in Wembley Stadium with 90,000 when Anthony Joshua defended his heavyweight titles against Klitschko in 2017. for me, this will be the second largest crowd I've ever been in. The only other ones that would surpass this one, or that would be just behind this one, I should say, would be other fights I attended at AT&T Stadium, which are the two Manny Pacquiao fights there, as well as when Canelo fought there the first time against Liam Smith, which was the record for the building up until what we're going to see on Saturday.
All right, I want to get into that fight and everything about it in a second, but I want to look back first at what we saw this past weekend with Andy Ruiz, former unified heavyweight champion, makes his return, first time back in the ring since December of 2019. He wins a wide decision over Chris Areola. That's the good part of it. The bad, got knocked down in the second round, was banged up a couple of times, hurt a couple of times during that fight. Give me your assessment of what you saw from Andy Ruiz.
I mean, the main thing is he got a win. Secondly, he got a win in a crowd-pleasing style, so it doesn't hurt him in terms of when they try to market his next event. He keeps himself in position as one of the top heavyweights in the division. I mean, we all know the titles are tied up at the moment because of what's going on between Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury, who, by the way, is here in the hotel making all kinds of outlandish comments.
Just holding court.
Training and here to support his good friend Billy Joe Saunders. But in any event, Andy Ruiz, look, I mean, considering the time off he's had, and Areola also had time off. I thought Areola came in great shape. You know, I look at the fight more about Andy was supposed to win. I'm like, if only Chris had gotten in that kind of shape and taken it that seriously when he was 30 instead of 40, what could have been with him? But for Andy, look, he just keeps on moving the chains forward. He's going to get another big fight. I mean, he mentioned King Kong Ortiz after the fight, who was there ringside. That'd be a pretty good fight. I'd like to see him fight Deontay Wilder if ultimately Joshua and Fury is finalized, and that leaves Deontay Wilder without the third fight against Fury for the time being. That's a pretty big deal fight that PBC could put together, and you know would be a look, in the economics that we live in today, that's a pretty big pay-per-view fight, relatively speaking. The former heavyweight champions against each other, who both draw from different fan bases. Obviously, you know, Andy's got the Latino fan base behind him. Deontay is a very big name, certainly among the black community. And you put the two together and they all buy the pay-per-view, not to mention just your average boxing fan, whatever color or nationality they are. That's a very interesting fight. I hope that happens. But I didn't think Andy looked great, but I think he did good enough to beat the guy he was supposed to beat in front of him.
Yeah, he did fine. And credit to Chris Areola, who came in shape and was probably at his best for any time in the last 5-6 years at least. What worried me about Ruiz was the knockdown. And, you know, there are two reasons to like Andy Ruiz as a heavyweight contender. One is his hand speed. He's among, if not the fastest heavyweight in terms of hand speed that's out there. The other was punch resistance. And, you know, we came into this, Dan, at least I did, thinking Ruiz has a granite chin. Like, you can't knock out Andy Ruiz. That was kind of my mindset.
I don't know why you thought that.
I mean, look, he went 12 rounds with Joseph Parker. He got knocked down and got up from Anthony Joshua. Like, he fought some big punchers, right? And I thought coming in, you know, he had one of the best chins in all of boxing. Seeing Areola knock him down, that made me wonder. And it made me wonder, like, did the weight loss contribute to that? I mean, losing weight, as Sergio Mora has told me, like, that contributes to punch resistance. Like, if you lose too much weight, it can affect how you take a shot. So if Andy Ruiz...
He was still, like, close to 260 pounds, though. So
he was, but, I mean, that's 30 pounds off his weight from the Joshua fight, and then 50 or something from what he was at his peak. I'm just saying, like, if he doesn't have a granite chin, that makes me believe less in Andy Ruiz.
I think that you're doing a little bit too deep of a look at it. My perspective on it is this. You got a guy that hadn't fought for a year or whatever it's been for quite a while, and same with Areola. They're two guys that like to get in there and brawl and slug it out. And when you're in the trenches, in close like that, you're going to get clipped, and he went down, and he got up. I mean, I try not to read too much into knockdowns unless it's something of a very devastating fashion. And I didn't see it as that. He got popped right back up, kind of like he did against Anthony Joshua, and on with the fight they went. You know, so maybe for a few seconds after the knockdown, you're kind of, if you're an Andy Ruiz fan, you're worried, okay, can he survive the round? But, getting knocked down to me is not indicative of if you're going to be able to, you know, contend with the other top fighters in the weight class, because, you know, him and Chris are guys that like to slug it out, and you're going to get hit, and that's just what happens. So, you know, is he going to get knocked out eventually? Probably, because frankly, most heavyweights at some point get knocked out. So, I mean, it's happened to, you know, other than maybe like Rocky Marciano, can you think of a top heavyweight that never got stopped? I mean, think of the greats. Klitschko got stopped. Lennox Lewis got stopped. Mike Tyson got stopped. Evander Holyfield later in his career got stopped. you go on down the list. I mean, at some point, guys get stopped. So it's not, you know, just because Holyfield got stopped late in his career. Is anybody going to say that Evander Holyfield didn't have a good chin?
No, Foreman, Joe Frazier, go even further back. They all got stopped.
Yeah, exactly. George, I mean, Ali, even, you know, at the end of his career, he, you know, had a great, great, great all-time chin. You know, in his waning days, he was stopped. So it happens. It's boxing. They get hit.
No, you're right. All right, let's move on to the fight we have this weekend. Canelo, Billy Joe Saunders, unified 168-pound championship. Let's start with what we've seen here in Dallas this week, specifically some of the gripes that Billy Joe Saunders has had about what's been going on here. It began weeks ago with Billy Joe being upset about the fact that there will be no British judge involved in this contest, and it continued this week where Billy Joe threatened to leave if the ring size was not increased from 20 by 20 to 22 by 22. He eventually got his way. What have you made of kind of Billy Joe being Billy Joe in a way?
Billy Joe is doing what fighters do often leading to fights, certainly after fights. He's setting up the excuse for when he loses and loses badly. That's what he's doing, in my opinion. You know, as Eddie Hearn has said, as is obvious if you've ever watched Billy Joe Saunders fight, he has fought his entire career within the confines of the standard ring in the UK, which is 20 foot by 20 foot inside the ropes. And now he comes here to Dallas seeking a ring that is 24 by 24, which is within the Texas rules, but was never going to happen. Canelo asked for 18 by 18. Then they, you know, he was fine with 20, which is what they were going to, which what the commission was going to set up. And Saunders makes the threat at 20 by 20 to leave if it's not 22 by 22. And as Eddie said, and I think Eddie is absolutely correct about this, when he went to Canelo to tell him what was going on and wanted to have Billy not just stay in his room all week and do media and make appearances and try to, you know, hype up the show a little bit more or lose all of that, you know, if Canelo would just give it to him, he would do all of the work that goes into promoting the event. But Canelo gave in, and basically it was sort of like, forget about that promotion stuff. I'm going to give it to him because I don't want to hear any excuses after the fight. That tells you how confident Canelo Alvarez is. And if you ask me, giving a guy a 22-foot ring or a 20-foot ring is not going to be the difference whether Billy Joe Saunders wins or loses this fight. So I applaud Canelo for not being, you know, playing hardball and doing that. He's like, you want 22? I'll give you 22, and I'm still going to beat your ass.
Let me just ask you this. Is it not insane that the ring size is a variable in a fight? Like, I know in baseball, parks have different dimensions, but those dimensions don't change from game to game. They're uniform. Could you imagine, like, the Lakers saying, okay, if you come to L.A., you have to play on a smaller court? Or the Cowboys saying, our field's going to be 120 yards long. Is it not a little bonkers?
It's a little bonkers.
That boxing rings can change in size based on the fights?
It reminds me of one of the great scenes in movie history. I'm sure you've seen the movie Hoosiers.
Yeah.
When the coach, Gene Hackman, playing the coach, taking the small town team from the little high school gym and into this big giant arena for their big high school tournament, and he tells the kid on the team, you know, give me the tape measure, and he goes and he measures. Oh, yeah, the ring's the basket's still 10 feet. I mean, it's a classic thing. The point being is you play in the 10-foot ring in our little dinky gym, and you guys got this far. We're going to do the exact same thing. It's just a bigger attendance and a bigger stadium. So, yes, it's a little bit weird, but I think one of the reasons for that is because unlike in the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball where things can be uniform, boxing is a hodgepodge of state and local commissions, tribal commissions, other countries all around the world. And they have different rules and different abilities to provide certain assets to the event. A ring size may be one of them. It's, you know, not everybody has a boxing ring laying around. So there has to be some kind of variable, maybe not that big, because if you look at the Texas rules, which, you know, I actually did this week when I was writing about this ring size situation, there's very specific wording in the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, which oversees combat sports in this state, where they say a boxing ring can be, at their discretion, no less than 16 by 16 inside the ring and no more than 24 by 24 on the inside. So there is wiggle room because rings are different. It's not a uniform thing. So I get that. But in general, they should basically be 20 by 20 wherever you are. That's what they are in the UK. That's what they are almost every fight I can think of in Nevada, for example, where they have, you know, a lot of the major fights. I believe the same thing in California. At the end of the day, it would have been 20 by 20. Billy Joe raised the stink. Canelo said, you know what, go screw yourself. I'll give you your 22 by 22, and I'm still going to kick your ass. And
you I get that the fractured nature of boxing and the fact that each state has its own set of rules makes it problematic. But I just love to see, like, how about, like, on a Zoom call, you get Nevada, Texas, New Jersey, and New York together and say, look, guys, let's set some uniform rules here. Like, the four biggest states where you in terms of boxing, California, throw them in the list too, five biggest states, you get some uniform rules. Like, it's just bonkers to me. And Sergio was bringing this up, like, you know, the type, what the mat's made of matters too. Like,
sure, absolutely.
I mean, it's just like, this is insane. Like, the where you compete should not be a variable in the outcome of the fight. It should just be uniform. And if, you know, over time, people will adjust. Like, I've heard from people saying, no, flyweights can't fight in a 20 by 20 or 20. It has to be smaller.
No, I there's something to be said about that. Because
I don't know. I mean, just people will adjust.
You would want to watch a flyweight fight in just a gigantic ring.
Do you think it would have mattered where Estrada and Chocolatito fought? Like, they were just playing Rock'em Sock'em Robot the entire
time.
That's
true. I mean, that's the style of their fights. But, you know,
how many flyweights do you know that move around, though?
Like, I'm okay with a little bit of a variable.
I think Edwin Soto is going to need, like, a smaller ring.
Probably
like,
not.
Come on.
I ran into Takayama's guys the other day, earlier this morning. They're very pumped up for
you
the fight.
You think they're going to need a small ring for that?
So.
No.
I kind of like the Wild West nature of it to a certain degree. It's interesting, but there should be some, at least, like, in other words, instead of the rule book saying 16 by 16 all the way up to 24 by 24, which is a pretty big spread, you know, it should be maybe smaller. I think that is standard Nevada's rules, that it is 20 by 20 when they redid some of their statutes not that long ago, or, you know, however long ago it was, that it's 20 by 20. And as I said to Eddie when we were chatting earlier, I said, you know, their contract didn't specify a ring size. Like many boxing contracts, certain things are just subject to the local commission rules. So, you know, you have to accept what the commission says because they're the organization that's regulating the event. My belief is if you don't want something to become an issue, put it in black and white. You know, you would never put in your employment contract, you know, pay me somewhere between, you know, whatever, you know, $10 and $20. You would say, no, pay me $20 or whatever the dollar figure is. They should do the same thing with ring size. They do it. There's been issues over gloves. I always say, if you don't want to have an issue over gloves, you put in that, you know, fighter, because usually it says you can pick your own gloves as long as they're approved by the commission. But if you want to be really specific, they should put in the contract that Billy Joe Saunders is going to wear 8-ounce Grant gloves, that Canelo Alvarez is going to wear 8-ounce, you know, no boxing, no life gloves, or whatever brand that they select, and be done with it. And there's no argument, particularly the week of the fight. If they wanted to argue and moan about the ring, that should have been handled a month ago.
I would say one thing, too, about the griping over judging, like not having a British judge. It shouldn't matter where a guy comes from.
But
like,
it does. It's boxing.
It does. But, like, you know, British judges could just as easily screw over Billy Joe Saunders.
100%.
Like, I mean, I think it goes back to the same discussion, right? Like, there should be a ranking system of judges. And at the very least, when you have a fight of this caliber, we know who the top three judges are. Like, Steve Weisfeld is not judging this fight. I don't know why. I have no idea why. Steve Weisfeld is the best judge in boxing.
I'm glad there's no British judge because then there's no pressure on him to vote for the Brit or to, you know,
as Canelo said, there's no Mexican judge either.
100%. Like, suffer the wrath of the...
He's like, I'm not American. Yeah. I may live here, but I'm not American.
No, and I mean, the judging panel that they picked, I forget, it's like, who was it? It's
Glenn Feldman is on there.
It was a good group of...
It's a good judge. It's a good group of judges.
I forget who the other one from Las Vegas. But they picked reputable... three American judges.
Yeah.
They picked Mark Calloway, who's one of the best referees in boxing. He's a Texas referee who's done a number. And, you know, if you watch fights that take place there, he's done plenty of their significant fights. So, in my opinion, their group of officials between the three judges and the referee, they're first class, top class guys. And, you know, I think Tim Cheatham was one of the other judges.
I'd have to double check the list. It's a good group. No, the judging group is fine.
But I'm glad there's no Brit, and I'm glad there's no Mexican, because that puts an unusual amount of pressure on the guy. If he votes for his hometown guy in a close fight, there's accusations. And if he goes against him, that guy has to suffer the wrath of the fans in his home country.
The whole thing is, then, like, if you're afraid of the fans, don't do the job. Like, just don't sign up to be a referee. Don't accept the assignment. Like, you don't have to take an assignment to be a judge in a fight like this. It should be the top three guys. I don't care if they are from Guam. They should be chosen as the top three judges in boxing.
And they have done that for this fight. If you were to make a list of the... Well, I mean, look, I mean, I have the highest regard for Steve Weisfeld. I've known Steve for like 20 years probably. He's a great judge, but he can't do every single fight. It's just not feasible. I mean, there are other qualified boxing judges. So
I agree. I'm just saying, like, the biggest of fights. Like, the biggest of fights, the best of judges. Like, that doesn't solve all the problems, but at least...
No, but what they've done is they've taken from the pool of best judges.
Right.
So if you were to do... I'm not sure how you would do the ranking system, but whatever it would be, just on your knowledge of what's considered a good scoring or bad scoring or whatever it is, if you looked at the folks that are assigned to this fight and you made a list, like, off the group of officials that work regularly, there's no doubt that the crew that they've selected for this fight, each and every one of those judges are elite, world-class, top-level judges who do a good job. You know, not every single fight maybe you agree with perfectly, but this is a good quality group of judges, and I think they'll do a good job and an honest job, obviously. And Billy Joe Saunders, if he loses the fight by a decision, he's not going to have anything to moan about, I don't think. And likewise, if he wins the fight, you know, Canelo shouldn't have anything to moan about as long as it's perceived as a legitimate decision. What I always have a problem with is when there's some crazy outlier judge that's not in the reality of not only the other two on the panel, but the entire boxing universe, be it fan, media, other people in the business.
CJ Ross crazy. For Canelo Mayweather.
Because that can really ruin the perception of a fight. If you have two judges that score a good job and one has it like 11-1, you just sort of like shake your head sometimes. Now, one thing that I know it's sort of like in the weeds. People have to understand. I know there were some people that were kind of upset, like, yeah, Ruiz beat Areola last week, but he didn't win, 11-1, which is what two of the judges scored it. And I've had this happen to me in certain fights. You can have, if you saw a score, and I told you the score of the fight was 118 and the other guy only won one round, man, that was a blowout. No. I've had fights where every single round, for the most part, is a close round. But because of whatever you see, you are just one after the other, giving it to one guy. And when you tally it up, you got a scorecard that could be 10-2, 11-1. It doesn't mean it's a blowout fight. It can be a very competitive fight, even if the scores are wide. I always think of a fight going back many years ago. I used to watch the old USA Network Tuesday night fights. There's a really good, exciting heavyweight fight between Andrew Gallada and Corey Sanders, the African-American Corey Sanders from Washington, D.C. They put on an absolute brawl. Gallada won the fight, and I believe it was like almost a shutout. And if you watch that fight, every single round was like a barn burner, and Gallada won by that much, like every single round. So just because they came up with a 11-1 on Areola and Ruiz doesn't mean it's not a competitive or close fight, and the same can be said for any number of other bouts.
I agree. Every round is his own fight. That's how you score them.
People forget that, though. You're really watching 12 fights.
Right. All right, let's talk about this fight. Canelo Alvarez coming into this as a significant favorite. I think you and I both agree there's plenty of reasons why. What are kind of the unknowns for you in a fight like this? And I guess that's a roundabout way of saying, like, how does Billy Joe Saunders win?
That's a very good question. I don't know how he wins. I mean, there's certainly, you can get lucky and land a great punch. No, I don't even say lucky. I mean, he's a skilled boxer. But, you know, if you land and you can find the right spot, any boxer against another boxer can win if they happen to land the right shot. The problem is Canelo has proven time and again to have one of the greatest chins in boxing and doesn't get caught with a lot of stupid punches. And Billy Joe has never shown himself to be that big of a puncher. So, you know, while it's possible, the percentage, the chances of that happening seem to be awfully low. I think he might be able to be a little tricky, maybe have some success boxing against Canelo. Can he do it enough to win 7 rounds? I question that also. Canelo Alvarez, no David Lemieux. It's a totally different ballgame. Now, that was the fight where Billy Joe was an underdog, and he went to Lemieux's home area up in Quebec and just did a number on him, outboxed him, and just did not allow Lemieux to get into his game. But he's such a much more one-dimensional fighter than Canelo is. You know, Canelo can box. He's got good defense. He's got a great offensive arsenal. He can do a lot more things, in my opinion, than Saunders can. He's got more ways to win. Can he win a decision? Of course. Can he win by a knockout? Yes. Can he do it by a headshot? Absolutely. Can he do it by a body shot? Can he win some rounds by boxing? Can he counterpunch? Absolutely. Can he come forward? Absolutely. You know, Billy can't do all that stuff. So, it's a very daunting challenge. But again, Canelo wants to be the undisputed champion at the 168-pound weight class. And if you're going to get all four belts, you got to fight the other guys with the titles. And Billy Joe's got the WBO belt, and that's the target right now, and that's what he wants to add to the other ones he's got, and then go after the IBF champion, Caleb Plant, at the end of the year. So Saunders gets the fight, and you know, he's the underdog. Let's see if he can draw on his hubris. He's never lost before. He's an Olympian. He's got some good wins in his career, even though they're not the A-plus level wins, against Andy Lee, against Chris Eubank, against you know, a couple other guys, against Lemieux. But, I mean, I'm picking Canelo Alvarez. I think he stops him at some point in the fight.
You know, my thing is that Billy Joe Saunders' best weapon is his jab, offensively. And since he's moved up to super middleweight, the CompuBox numbers suggest he is even more prolific with that jab, throws it a lot more in his fights. No one's ever beaten Canelo by out jabbing him. Like, Kovalev tried and had some success, at least on the scorecards. Gennady Golovkin was excellent with that power jab, but he didn't win ultimately in that rematch. Arislandi Lara, close fight, threw a lot of jabs in that fight, but Canelo won that one. And we're talking about, at least with Golovkin and Lara, two guys that I believe are better than Billy Joe Saunders.
Oh, definitely.
So if those two guys couldn't do it, I don't know how Billy Joe Saunders is going to do it. I think we're going to have to see, Dan, a completely different Billy Joe Saunders. And I don't think that guy's there. I don't think we're going to see a reinvented version of him that is going to pose Canelo the type of problems that, you know, make it possible for him to win.
The only thing about that, what you just said about, you know, totally altering their style because what he has is probably not good enough to work. And I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I just had in the back of my mind, if he was going to be able to pull the upset, he might have to take a page out of his Tyson Fury's book. As we were talking about earlier, Tyson Fury is here. He's close friends with Billy Saunders. They're on the same team with each other. They've known each other forever. And it made me think about what Tyson Fury did in the rematch with Deontay Wilder, where he came to the press conferences, and when he did his interviews and spoke to the media, he literally said to the press what the game plan was going to be. Now, fighters don't usually do that, so when Tyson Fury did that, I don't think a lot of us believed him, but he said, I'm going right after him. Well, you're going to go right after him? What are you talking about? You know, he's a monstrous puncher. You're a boxer. You're, you know, got, you know, good moves and fast on your feet and good hand speed. What, are you going to go right after the biggest puncher in the heavyweight division? I said, why would you, you know, not me, but I did, but plenty of other people also said the same. Why would you do that? You had so much success in the first fight. You know, you were able to do all these things. I mean, they gave you a draw, fine, but you know, a lot of people thought you won the fight. He said, I didn't win the fight. So if I didn't win the fight doing that, I have to do something different. And he went right after Deontay, exactly like he said he was going to do, and he beat him up and he knocked him out. So maybe the wisdom of what he did that worked when people were critical going into the fight has maybe rubbed off on Billy Joe, or Tyson has told him to do that, and Billy maybe takes that to heart. But there's a difference between trying to do it and taking it to heart and actually implementing it. Doing that against a multidimensional fighter like Canelo is a whole different ballgame, and I'm not in any way downgrading what Fury did against Wilder, but I think we can agree that Wilder is a much more one-dimensional fighter than Canelo is. I just don't see, even if he tries to change it up and go at him, that's like walking in my opinion, because of his versatility, is like walking into the propeller.
Look, he's going to have to take Canelo out of his comfort zone. And I think that's what some of this week has been about, or in the last couple of weeks, you know, trying to get under Canelo's skin. But Dan, like, a lot of guys have tried to do that, you know, dating back to Floyd Mayweather, Triple G, yeah, go down the list. I mean, even like Kovalev to it, not really Kovalev, Daniel Jacobs, listen, they had a little face-to-face pushing match at the weigh-in. Like, you know, I mean, guys have tried that with Canelo.
You and I have both covered a lot of Canelo fights.
I mean, the guy fought for a promoter he hated. Like, I mean, like,
to me,
he's unflappable.
Canelo Alvarez is one of the most mentally strong fighters, not just since I've covered boxing, but even when you read about other fighters, he just has something in his mind where he just has that unbreakable, like, no one's going to mess him up on his game plan. I mean, even with Mayweather, when he was a baby and he lost the fight, he never, like, got out of sorts in that fight. Floyd didn't really ruffle him or get him, you know, off his game or make him do something that was unusual or anything like that. You know, Canelo knows who he is. He knows what he can do. He's very confident, and I don't think Billy Joe Saunders could do anything no matter what he says or does in the build-up to this fight, that's going to take him off of his game plan. Part of that's because of Canelo's own, mental focus. Part of it's because of the team he has around him that keeps him that way. He knows it's his event. Billy is you got to have two guys in the ring, but he knows everybody's coming to see him. Nothing he's going to do. No threats of leaving Texas because the ring was 2 feet different than what he wanted or anything like that. I just don't see it happening.
Not to look past Billy Joe Saunders here.
No, let's look past Billy Joe Saunders.
We can do that. But, Canelo's made it clear he wants to win all four pieces of the super middleweight title, become the first fighter to ever win all four belts. That means beating Caleb Plant. I don't have a lot of confidence that fight's going to happen in September, Dan. I got to be honest. Let me tell you why. It began to germinate for me last weekend, maybe even before that. But last weekend when Caleb Plant did that interview on the Ruiz Areola pay-per-view, Brian Kenny, our good friend, was trying to walk him towards a Canelo conversation. And he really wasn't going there. He wasn't willing to even say Canelo's name, I don't think. And that kind of struck me as odd.
Well, he has said that, though. That's not I've interviewed Caleb in the recent past, and he's...
But this is I'm just saying this was an opportunity kind of for him to, in a big platform to talk about Canelo and didn't do it. And that kind of struck me. That resonated with me a little bit. And in a bigger sense, if this fight's not on Fox pay-per-view or Showtime pay-per-view, whatever it is, even if the money's better, I'm not sure Caleb Plant comes over. I'm not sure that... Eddie Hearn, on behalf of DAZN, is going to, and he's going to represent Canelo in these talks. This relationship is, whether it's on paper or not, it's going to continue. Right. There's a lot of comfort there on
Agreed.
The Canelo side. Eddie's going to present an offer with guarantees that may and probably will dwarf what Fox and Al Haymon are willing to guarantee. And if that's the case, Canelo may say, well, I want all four belts, but if I'm going to make X more guaranteed dollars, why am I fighting for X less on Fox? I just think that's a scrambled way of saying, I think the finances and the politics could get involved and cause that fight to be delayed at some point.
The only reason why that fight wouldn't have, if Canelo wins on Saturday, no injuries, he's ready to go in the fall. The only reason why that fight wouldn't happen, in my opinion, is because, and I'm not even saying Caleb Plant, the individual athlete, but something on the other side decides that we don't want to do it at this moment. Because no matter what the offer is, whether it's on the DAZN platform or it's on Fox or Showtime, Caleb Plant will make multiples of millions, way more than he ever made in his life before this fight and likely after this fight, no matter what happens. Because even if he knocks off Canelo, just because you beat the man doesn't mean you become the man, at least in terms of your earning power. I always think back to when, De La Hoya controversially lost the second fight to Mosley and wanted to do a third fight. And Shane, wouldn't take, I forget what it was, 10, some crazy number that was way more than he already won. He wanted to have the much bigger share. I'm like, you, Oscar's still the star, and a lot of people thought he won. In other words, you don't get that just because you win the fight. So, look, I think Caleb Plant, the athlete, always says, I'll fight anybody. He's not showed any reason to think that he was not serious. He's fought the guys they put in front of him. He's fought some good opponents. Canelo, no one's going to question his ability to or desire to fight the top guys. He's been talking about the 168 title all this time. He's actually giving Plant a little bit of leverage because he's made it so much a part of his sales pitch that I want to do this. So if the other guy is the one holding that final piece of the puzzle, you have to pay for that. So I don't think that the Canelo team has a problem paying him a tremendous amount of money to do the fight. Sometimes fighters and their teams have to learn how to say yes. But I also, by that same token, if there's a similar kind of deal, I don't think that Canelo would have a problem. I think it would probably be on Showtime. He's comfortable there. He's done a number of his bigger fights prior to his coming to HBO and then to DAZN. He did a lot of those early fights on pay-per-view with Showtime. There's a comfort there, I know, that between him and Steven Espinoza. So, to me, it's a no-brainer. What possible fight could Caleb Plant have that could, A, give him more money, B, give him more potential glory, and C, even if he loses, give him a huge amount of notoriety and credibility? There's nothing. It doesn't exist.
There's nothing. David Benavidez is out there.
Great
and
fight,
Benavidez
doesn't mean anything compared
him,
to
may
Canelo.
Beat him. That's a...
No, but who in their right mind would say, I'm Caleb Plant. I'm going to go fight David Benavidez instead of Canelo Alvarez. What, are you an idiot?
I just worry that, like, and look, I'm not, as a boxing fan, I'm not dying to see Plant versus Canelo. Like, it's relevant. I don't know that it's the biggest fight out there. I'd still like to see Canelo Golovkin 3. I'd rather see
Plant Canelo than the third Golovkin fight.
I wouldn't.
And I say that because, to me, boxing history is important. And when you can do something that has never been done.
It's never been done because we created a WBO belt like 20 years ago. It's the only reason it never was.
Whatever the reason. The point is, even in the three belt era, there was never an undisputed super middleweight champion. Canelo Alvarez is the number one star in boxing. He's the pound for pound number one. Caleb Plant's an undefeated guy with a good record against some good opponents. He's got a world title. The undisputed title is something, and I always say this, if it was so easy to do, everybody would do it. It's hard. It's freaking hard to be undisputed. And Canelo is on the path. If he wins Saturday, there's one more to do it. So give me that fight. That's a very big fight. It's a big freaking deal. If they could sell 70,000 or 65,000 for Canelo to fight here in Texas against an unknown, at least to the American audience, a British fighter, what do you think they could do against a guy like Caleb Plant, who's from Tennessee, a Midwest American, you know, amateur quality fighter, now a world champion?
I agree.
That's a big deal. That's a much bigger fight, in my opinion, in the United States, Canelo versus Plant, than Saunders.
I just worry about the finances. I think DAZN Dan is going to do really well on this fight.
Yeah.
Both in the U.S. and the U.K., where they are now established, and they're going to want to throw a ton of money at a Plant versus Canelo show. They're not going to want to have Canelo on and then just like let him walk away. They don't have rights to him, but they're going to make it financially, you know, unpalatable for him to walk away. And then we've seen some weird, I don't know, people get on me for some of the criticisms I level at PBC fighters at times, but we've seen some weird things happen. Like, shout out to Tom Brown for some of the craziest fucking comments I've ever heard in my life about how people prefer to see, you know, Jermall Charlo versus Juan Montiel. Like, I mean, it's like the whole thing is just crazy. We just see some weird things happen on that side of the street where, like, money doesn't necessarily talk and prestige doesn't necessarily talk every time.
There have been a few guys that have been affiliated with PBC and Al Heyman who have been able to take a walk and get bigger deals on other platforms. Jesse Vargas did it and made a lot of money fighting in some DAZN fights and is going to probably be back on DAZN later in the year. Daniel Jacobs, same thing. So it's not unprecedented that a quality PBC guy who is advised
but
or
Jacobs also
by,
was kind of, he was HBO for a while.
No, like, but I'm just saying, like, he had a relationship with Heyman.
He did.
And so while the vast majority of those fighters do their thing on the PBC shows on Fox and Showtime, there are examples of quality fighters like the ones I just mentioned who have been able to walk across the street to do things for the right deals, either as a one-off or for multiple fights. And hopefully, whether it's Canelo going there or it's Plant coming to DAZN, that they can work out the fight, because that's the fight that should happen. I mean, in fact, when Caleb Plant fought earlier this year, I did an interview with him for something I'd written for, I forget if it was for Boxing Senior for the Ring, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that he said this to. The whole reason they decided to fight Caleb Truex, who was the mandatory, although it wasn't due yet, was to clear the deck of the mandatory to allow them to have the space to do whatever they wanted later in the year, specifically in the event that there was hopefully a Canelo Alvarez fight, which is obviously a huge fight. Because don't forget, it's not just that Canelo would have the chance to be the undisputed champion. It's a chance for Caleb Plant to be the undisputed champion.
Huge chance.
I mean, so if you work your whole life as a professional boxer, you know, as an amateur first, as a kid, now up to the pro ranks, you get a world title, you've made some good money, but not, you know, massive, massive life-altering money, and you get the opportunity to fight the number one guy, a guy that's perceived as the best, for, again, the most money that you're ever going to make, probably ever, period, if you're one single event in your fight career, prior to the fight or probably after the fight. And if you win, you're the undisputed champ of the world. That's never been done before. Why else do you do all that road work? Why else do you go hit the bag? Why else do you run, you know, when no one's watching? Why do you do all the things you do to prepare yourself for the battle? Because the punches feel the same, whether you're fighting a nobody opponent or you're fighting a top quality guy, still getting hit in the face. Get hit in the face for the most money and the most glory. That's the fight. So if they turn it down, if the offer is not palatable, again, we're getting ahead of ourselves because there's a fight Saturday, and, you know, maybe they'll be able to make a deal easily.
But those talks pick up quickly. They want to fight in September, so we're only a few months away.
I just hope that Canelo comes out, that the fight, you know, everybody will take a, you know, take a, you know, take a couple of weeks off or a month off, but then Eddie Hearn will get the marching orders to go talk to the PBC side of the street and see if they can make the fight. And I see absolutely no reason why it shouldn't. There's no contract from a promoter or a TV network. There's no issues with the sanctioning bodies. There's nothing that's in the way of that fight being made.
All right, let's finish with a quick thought on another fight we want to see made. Fury, Joshua. It's kind of comical, Dan. We've got Tyson Fury hanging in the lobby. You've got Eddie Hearn hanging in the lobby. All we need is like a fax contract from Saudi Arabia to get this deal done. But like, where do you think we stand with all this? You've got doomsday predictions from Bob Arum. You've got rosy optimism from Eddie Hearn. Like, where do you fall on that spectrum?
Probably somewhere in the middle. I mean, you know, it's... You're never as bad as you are on your worst day, or as good as you are on your best day, and it's sort of the same thing. I mean, you know, Bob is the world is going to fall apart, and Eddie is like, you know, it's nothing but roses. Obviously, if it was going to be easy, the deal would be done already. There's problems because I try to use common sense. I know that doesn't always work in boxing. One thing I have realized is when you analyze a situation that's occurred where it looks like somebody's done something really ridiculous or crazy or stupid or they're making the wrong decision, I finally realized that it happens because there are people in this business who are just idiots and they do things that don't make sense. I'm not in any way suggesting that's the case with Eddie or Bob, who are, you know, both very intelligent, you know, business people who know what's going on and how to do a deal. The problem is, if you are putting up $150 million or thereabouts and you can't bring in the crowd at this moment in time in Saudi Arabia because of the pandemic, you know, it's sort of like Arum said to me in an interview. He's like, you know, they make these great deals. Everything is good. They put up the money. Everything is square. And then somebody says, yeah, but what about the COVID? And then it's like a shock back to reality. So, again, I've always thought this. I do think that the fight will happen. I'd be disappointing if it didn't, obviously, I think for everybody. But I have been skeptical that it would take place in that summer time frame, that it might have to get pushed a little bit. And I know it's been written about and talked about a little bit, but it's never like at the top of the list for problems. I think it's a big freaking deal that they're trying to plan this fight at the same time when the Olympics are going to be taking place. Not as competition in terms of the viewing audience, but because the single most important member of Team Joshua, besides Joshua, is Rob McCracken, his trainer. And Rob McCracken also is the head coach of Team Great Britain. And I just have no idea how you make that decision. That's like, you know, do you save your one child or your other child? In other words, he's been with Anthony Joshua his whole career. Anthony Joshua and Rob have a bond like no other, in my opinion. You know, he didn't get rid of him after he lost the fight with Andy Ruiz. I mean, he spoke about how that was never going to happen, that Rob is part of him, part of his team. They're as close in my mind, as far as I know, as you can make the argument as it is with Canelo and Eddie Reynoso. I mean, seems to me they're together for the long term. He's not leaving Anthony Joshua in the biggest fight of his life for the undisputed championship to be at the Olympics. And by the same token, you put your heart and soul as a coach into these young kids who it's been their dream forever to represent their country in the Olympics. Rob came up through that amateur system. He knows how important that is to these kids. How do you let those kids down at the biggest moment of their life and leave them in the hands of another coach for the Olympic Games? So
it's the ultimate solve and split the baby.
I mean,
moment.
But I just don't see how you overcome that. So, you know, maybe they've formulated some kind of plan, but I think that
I don't is think Dan, that I don't could, think they have, because the way it was explained to me by two people was that AJ has said to Rob, you know, you do what you got to do. Like I'll do this fight without you. I don't. That strikes me as odd. Like, could you see like Canelo Alvarez?
I don't think
going
Rob
up?
Would do that to Joshua.
I don't think he would either. But like, I mean, I don't even know is there a situation where he could take a private jet back and forth on the Saturday, like, and get back
you
into
gotta,
the Olympic bubble?
In that kind
I mean,
of fight,
it's a
man.
Lot.
You got to do the promotion.
I agree.
You got to be with your guy.
I mean, I agree.
That's not something you mess around with. I mean, that's you want to talk about getting ready to make an excuse. That's definitely they're lined up to be an excuse maker if your guy loses the fight. But you need to give on the level of the undisputed heavyweight championship and the Olympic Games, you got to give your best for both sides. So, you know, I don't know how it's going to happen. But again, that's just one significant factor in my mind of why the fight maybe gets pushed off the fall. And the other thing that people have to understand is it's not just about, you know, a bunch of rich folks in Saudi Arabia saying, you know, we're going to write you a big check and come and fight in our stadium or our location. The people in Saudi Arabia who, you know, it sounds like, okay, they want to put up the 150, but there have been other things that they requested to sort of make up for that. That was not necessarily the way a site deal is done. They wanted to think that some of that money was going to buy elements of broadcast rights and sponsorship deals and that sort of stuff. And that, you know, that's real minutia inside baseball stuff, but that's not a normal site deal. And I'm sure they've had a come to grips with how they're going to work that out. And you remember, as Eddie has stated 1,000 times, it's not just they're talking to like Arum or they're talking to like his lawyer or this. You've got the Arum side and all the lawyers. You've got the Frank Warren side and the lawyers. You've got the Joshua side and the lawyers. You've got the Fury side and the lawyers. You've got Eddie and his people. You got MTK and their people. I mean, there's a lot of cooks in this kitchen. And it's hard to make the perfect dinner when you got that many people throwing stuff into the pot.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully it all gets resolved. And whether it's August, September, I don't really care. I mean, like,
Eddie says he wants to be able to get it done to announce it in the ring.
I don't think that's
after Saturday, but
that seems like
a far stretch.
Where we're sitting here right now as we record this on Thursday afternoon, that seems like a bit of a stretch.
Well, hopefully it'll get done. And
hey, I'd love to be the one standing there to talk to him, like Eddie.
Yeah.
AJ,
well, you get to ask the question.
AJ Fury, what do you got? And meanwhile, Fury comes in, rips the mic out of my hand again, which he did.
He'll be at the fight, so maybe you can get an interview with him after the fight.
I know Fury. What kind of depends on what kind of mood he's in. If somehow Saunders pulls it up, so I'm sure he'll be in a giddy mood at that point.
He'll probably start singing.
Oh God! All right, Dan, appreciate it, man. Always good to catch up with you, and welcome back to the scene, man. Back on the scene.
I appreciate it.
When we come back, my conversation with Roy Jones. All right, Roy Jones Jr. is a future Hall of Famer, longtime broadcaster. He's actually here in Dallas to be part of the DAZN broadcast of Canelo Alvarez's super middleweight unification fight against Billy Joe Saunders. Also a trainer. His fighter, Chris Eubank Jr., just picked up a win last weekend. Happy, Roy, with what you saw from Chris Eubank?
Very happy with what I saw. More with the mental growth than anything, but the mental side of it showed me that he's really dedicated himself to becoming a better fighter, because when you see a guy that far in his career and he's still willing to change and do things against his own will to better himself, it shows you that he's definitely trying to grow in the sport.
You look at trainers and the most successful ones, Freddie Roach, Emmanuel Stewart, even here, Eddie Reynoso, not great fighters. You know, you don't see too many all-time great fighters operating as trainers. Why is that, do you think?
Because all-time great fighters have a hard time being patient enough to deal with guys who can't accomplish what they accomplished. They were all-time greats for a reason. Most guys like Reynoso, like my father, like Freddie Roach, like Emmanuel Stewart, they know exactly why they didn't make it. They figure it out. When they figure out why they didn't make it, they know how to go keep other people from making the same mistakes and not making it. So it's like certain guys learn certain things about themselves that had I done this, I could have been champ. So now when I teach somebody, I'm going to teach them how to do that so that they won't have the same faults that I had. I think that's true for Freddie. I think that's true for a lot of guys. My dad taught me. But my dad taught me all the stuff that he didn't do, and that's what made me so well.
You didn't have too many faults in your prime.
Not in my prime. You know, my
prime not in your prime.
I was a pretty slick dude in my prime. You know.
So, but do you ever get frustrated, like the guys you train with, like if they can't do what you know you could do in your best days?
No, because one thing that I understood off top was that I have a lot of faith in God. You know, my whole career was based on my faith, and it is based on my faith in God. Therefore, when you have faith in God, you learn a lot about people, about nature, about reality. You know, it's not coincidence that some people are tall, some people are short, some people are fast, some people are strong, some people are offensive-minded, some people are defensive-minded. But what I do know is that I understand that whatever DNA walks through that door is the start of what we're going to do. So if he's a tall guy, then quite naturally we want to fight outside and fight long. That's going to be our A side. But we're also going to learn how to fight inside and be a small guy if we have to, because most small guys are going to come try to crowd us because we're tall. They're going to expect us to be good outside, which we should be. But they're not going to expect us to also be good inside. So I try to use the DNA to create the most balanced fighter that I can get out of his own DNA.
Is training... Are you looking to expand your stable of fighters? I mean, how do you approach training in terms of who you
work
with?
Man, it's kind of hard for me because I love boxing so much. that if a kid is dedicated, I'd be willing to try to train him. You feel me? So I'm just like that. I just never really, I mean, you should pick and choose only guys that you feel can carry out what you train or what you teach. But what I understand about boxing, too, is that a lot of times the guys who struggle, they help the guys who don't struggle because they learn to appreciate the fact that they're not struggling. Mm-hmm. The guys who struggle, they also show the guys that do get it how hard it is for some people who aren't blessed with the gift to be able to have it. The guys that struggle sometimes show the guys that are doing it, that may struggle a little bit with something, how to overcome what they're struggling with because they watch these guys struggle so much. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to learn from the struggle. Everybody understands that the struggle don't pay as much. No, it doesn't. But there's a lot of skill, a lot of different lessons that God can teach you through a struggling fighter or a person that's struggling to cultivate what you want to teach him in the ring.
We saw you back in the ring for the Triller event. You're officially retired, though, right?
Yeah, I'm officially retired.
Eligible for Hall of Fame in 2022.
Maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe.
Not so sure about that?
Well, you never know. 2021 ain't over yet. You know, somebody might call me up.
But if you're,
you never know what happened.
Then you're not officially retired.
Well, I am retired, but you know, I mean, I'm a retired boxer. I ain't never retired because, yeah. I mean, I heard a guy named, well, I ain't going to call his name, but I heard a guy just say the other day that I'm washed up and I'm all washed to pieces. And I told him, well, won't he come show me that? So, you know what I mean? You never know what might happen. You know,
but
what
we
mean?
All get washed up at some point. Well, I'm washed up. Like, I don't even know if I had an athletic prime.
Yeah, but I'm a different kind of washed up.
You are. You're a much better version of
washed
up.
I'm still a monster when I'm washed up. You feel me? So,
if I told the 1996 version of Roy Jones that he wouldn't be eligible for the Hall of Fame until 2022, what would you have thought?
He'd say, I ain't sure it's going to work then. He'd tell you the same thing I'm telling you now. You might better wait to 2021 to tell him they're going in 2022. And don't even tell him. Because if you tell him that 2022 he's eligible, he'll probably end up saying yes to somebody before 2021 is over. That's just who he is.
But you were at, no, but in your prime, you were adamantly against fighting long. Like, you were public about it for...
I was adamant against it because it had gotten boring.
Yeah.
And here's what happens to you in boxing, though. Once you get away and do all you want to do, and you realize there ain't nothing more to do, then you say, okay, let me back up and let these other guys have it. But when you see that these other guys don't tend to it the way it should be tended to, mm-hmm. it pisses you off, make you want to go back and tend to it the way it should be tended to. Mm-hmm. So it's like when I see these guys, it's like me and Mike Tyson had an exhibition that was even more entertaining than most of these top fights that these top guys are having right now. Or they won't get in the ring with each other. Mm-hmm. We got in the ring with each other. You know, I should never have gotten in the ring with a Mike Tyson. Mm-hmm. I came from 154. You understand me? Mm-hmm. I turned pro as a dream of the week. Mm-hmm. Who would ever thought I'd get in the ring with the youngest and one of the most prolific heavyweight champions of all times.
I mean, who would have thought you got in the ring back in 2003 with Ruiz?
As like, a
I
dream
mean,
middleweight.
There's a lot of...
You started as a dream middleweight. Yeah. Middleweight. So it's like, man can't dictate what I do. Mm-hmm. That's obvious. God dictates what I do. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say I'm trying to make it to 22. We don't know what God's plan is. So I never know.
So officially, unofficially retired. We'll call it
that. Unofficially, yes.
Well, your Triller experience, how was it?
It was pretty good. Just that, you know, they didn't do what they were supposed to do as far as the payout went.
Yeah, Mike seemed to suggest that.
Yeah, so that didn't happen properly. And how they continued on with these other fights and all, and they haven't took care of what they're supposed to take care of yet, still befuddles me. But hopefully we'll get a lawyer, get to the end, get down to the nuts and bolts of the situation.
Are we talking about a substantive amount of money here?
Yeah, we are. Mm-hmm. So, you know. But it's all good. It's like, for me, I took it because I was trying to give people something to look forward to during the COVID time. Mm-hmm. And it was a big event, something that people, I knew they wanted to see because it was like I'm fighting a guy that can't fight. I'm fighting a guy that's bigger than me. Mm-hmm. And was me and him both were looked upon once as the baddest two dudes on the planet. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I was doing what Floyd doing and fighting somebody who has no idea what they're doing. I'm fighting one of the baddest dudes ever going there. You understand me? At 52 years old. Mm-hmm. And he 54, but he's still him. And still hits. I know he's hitting just as hard now as he was hitting just then, back then, I mean. So it's like, I don't do crazy things. When I do it for real. I mean, win, lose, or draw, I'll take mine, but you know, I'm going for real. So, I love life, man. I enjoy what I do, and I'm always about being a realist. So that's what it is.
You know, when people bemoan how you and Mike did big business and like other quote real fights don't do as big business, that drives me crazy because it's easy to fix that. Fight real fights, right?
Like, duh, I mean, duh.
But you say duh, but like, it's, you know, how many times do we have to see, you know, A side versus D side in boxing? I mean, you were in the 1990s, boxing was at a, like, right up there with basketball and the NFL. And, you know, when you fought, like, the world stopped. When, you know, the heavyweight fights happened, the world stopped. Nowadays, it's like between, like, lacrosse and soccer in terms of popularity. And that's all because these guys aren't fighting.
To this, to make it honest, man, I'm keep it real with you. I listened to Dr. J and Dominique Wilkins on TV the other day. And Dominique Wilkins said something very profound that when, the way he said that made me understand why I was a Michael Jordan fan as opposed to being a fan of a lot of the guys today. Some of the guys that I'm a fan of, Damian Lillard, one of my favorites, Giannis and
huge boxing fan, Damian Lillard.
Yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kyrie Irving. These guys, Russell Westbrook, I love a lot of these guys that play right now. You feel me? But what the problem was is today, and same thing is spilled over to boxing. Back in the day, in my heyday, we wanted to know who the best was. So you can't go join a team with somebody who almost as good as you, because now we ain't never going to find out who the best. We wanted to know who the best was. Dominique, Magic, Jordan, Bird. They wanted to know who the best was. They couldn't play together. No. I'm going to be in my squad. You're going to be in your squad. And let's find out who the best. But the ultimate showdown is who's the best of the leaders of the team. Or like Magic was the best at leading a team. You understand me? But him and Bird still had that personal battle inside that battle. Who was the best? Mm-hmm. You understand me? I don't think there's ever really been many more people that could lead a team and make a player play as good as Magic could. Mike could make him play pretty good too, don't get it wrong, but Magic did some phenomenal things. Magic made Ralph Sampson win the MVP in the All-Star game. He made Ralph Sampson win the MVP. That was all Magic Johnson. You understand me? Because that's how Magic was. But like Dominique said, the difference wasn't that day was that we wanted to see who was the best. Nowadays, it's not like that. Nowadays, it's how can I make the most money? How can I stay this way? How can I stay that way? So it's not about who's the best no more. Because if it was, these guys wouldn't be able to sleep at night without making a deal happen. Because when I was in my heyday, you know, I used to get on national TV and give them my phone number. Call me if you think you got a chance. You understand me?
Did Darius Mikulczewski ever get that phone number? Did he?
HBO got his phone number, though, and he wouldn't come. They offered him $5 million to come over here, and he wouldn't come. They sure did. They got his phone number and called him.
He wanted no part of that.
No, he didn't.
Does that, I mean, there's a lot, I mean, you go back and look at a lot of things, but did that ever frustrate you? I mean, how much did that frustrate you?
It don't frustrate me, man. You can't get mad. The reason it didn't frustrate me was because, listen, like I just told you right there, if you really want to see who the best, then you're going to go to where the best at. I had 7 titles. He had 1. Who the best? On paper.
You're the best.
Okay, so if you want to prove that ain't the case, come see me. But I'm not going to come to you. I'm the man. Why would I come to you? They just stole my gold medal and sold career that I still ain't got yet.
I don't think enough people are good.
But I still ain't got that yet. Now you think I'm going to bring my 7 titles and bring them to your backyard to ask you to take them again? No. No. No.
Where's the silver medal?
I don't know. My mama got it somewhere, I guess.
Never. You don't want to look at it?
No, I don't want nothing to do with it.
I don't think not enough people know that story. I mean, if you look it up, it's probably the greatest robbery of all time.
It is in Olympic history, I think.
Yeah. I mean, robbery in terms of corruption, too. Like, that was taken from you, a gold medal in the 1988 Olympics. How often do you think about that?
I mean, you think about it all the time because people are always going to bring it to your attention. But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, in reality, and I must tell people this, too, because I am a firm believer of God, and I know that God has led me throughout my life. And so it's like God took a negative, the biggest negative that I thought I could have had, and turned it into the biggest positive that I ever could have had. Because had I not got robbed of a gold medal, I probably would have had no aspirations to become heavyweight champ of the world. I probably would have been happy with just becoming a world champ and thought I did what I was supposed to do. I got a gold medal. I became world champion. I did all the stuff the way the book said it's supposed to go. But since they took my gold medal, it pissed me off to a point where now I got to go become an overachiever. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. The first person ever to turn professional as a junior middleweight and become heavyweight champ of the world. The first and only person to ever do it. The only living person, the only person on planet Earth to ever turn pro as a junior middleweight and become heavyweight champ. How many people can say they're the only person Only.
One. You.
That's it.
You mentioned guys don't want to see who the best is. The guy we're going to see Saturday, I think he wants to see who the best is.
Canelo. He's a different guy. He does. I got to give him credit. Mm-hmm. He does, and I tell you who else does. Terrence Crawford does.
Yep.
Those two guys, they want to see who the best. Mm-hmm. Those two, I know. It's a few guys around that still want to see, but I'm saying that's what has happened to the sport. It's not enough of that anymore. You understand me? Because if there's an A side and there's an East and a West, then we need to see who the best. If there's a North and a South, we need to see who got the mouth. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So we need to know you create two sides so that we can have a massive championship at the end. Mm-hmm. It's baseball like that, football like that, basketball like that. I don't watch soccer, but I'm sure soccer like that. You understand me? Tennis, everything is like that. Mm-hmm. If you get a Djokovic, and what's the guy he plays all the time?
Nadal, Federer, guys like that.
Federer. Yeah. I think with Federer. There's always somebody. Mm-hmm. McEnroe has somebody he always got a battle with. The horse secretariat had another horse that he always had a battle with. You understand me? Mm-hmm. But he had to always chase that horse down and beat him at the end. Mm-hmm. And he did it almost every time, pretty much every time. But he had to beat that horse every time, because that horse tried to beat him every time they raced. That's who made him so famous. You understand me? So Ali may not be Ali without Frazier. You understand where I'm coming from? It's just Tommy, Sugar Ray Leonard wouldn't be Sugar Ray without Tommy. We got to have that. So if you have that, but you duck and dodge it, are you really the best?
And
then how can you say you're the best ever? Because you didn't even fight the best when it was time to fight the best. So it's like, that's what the problem is today. We've watered the sport down with money, which I ain't saying that people don't deserve to make money. People deserve to make a lot of money. They put their lives on the line. But don't make it be just solely about money. It's still a sport here. Those other guys fought blood, sweat, and tears for next to nothing. Sugar Ray Robinson fighting two times in a three-week span. You understand where I'm coming from? These guys fought.
Sugar Ray Robinson was like 14 times in like 11. Like he was doing some crazy. He was fighting.
Do you hit me?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I got a guy named Shady Gamore. He did the same thing. He fought two times in 3 weeks. I mean, he fought three times in 14 days. Mm-hmm. He fought Friday. He fought next Friday. Then he fought the following Saturday. That's 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. He fought three times. That's people that want to fight.
Yep.
They ain't worried about the money. They trying to fight. Mm-hmm. You understand me? That's where we lost ourselves at. There's a confusion between getting messed up about money and being willing to fight whoever. You understand? And that's what messes up the sport. I was so glad when the Zone came in and gave Canelo that big contract, because it showed that their appreciation for him for going out taking on all comers. He was taking on all comers. People would expect him to even fight Billy Joe, because Billy Joe is a really good fight for him, and Billy Joe is a hell of a boxer. It's just a matter of how much Billy Joe got left in the tank or how good this fight going to be. But they wouldn't expect Canelo to fight him, but look what Canelo doing. Look how long they made Canelo wait before he fought Triple G. They had his own country turning against him because they wanted him to wait. He wanted to fight Triple G, but they wanted him to wait. But his own Mexican population started turning against him because they're saying, why are you not fighting this dude? They want to see the best fight the best. That's all they know. No, we don't run from nothing. So his own people was making him look bad by not allowing him to fight Triple G. Hence why when I was in my prime, I didn't really have a promoter. Because you ain't going to tell me who I can't fight. If he's supposed to be good as me, we fight him. We got to fight in the street. We fight. And if we fight in the street, then you have to put me in the ring with him too. But we're going to fight. No matter where we got to fight, we're going to fight. If I thought you was better than me, we're going to fight.
I was talking to Canelo this week.
If I thought you was good as me, we're going to fight. If I thought you was on that level, we're going to fight. But go ahead.
I was talking to Canelo this week about, he's 30 years old. He's in his prime. I asked him, did he feel unbeatable? And he was respectful of his opponents and of the sport, but he said, yeah, I feel unbeatable. You might be the only guy in boxing that could possibly understand that. I mean, was there a period of time in your career where you're like, you can't touch me, nobody can touch me?
Couldn't at all. Couldn't even put a glove on me hardly.
Yeah. What were those years for you?
I would tell up to heavyweight. Once I won the heavyweight title, when I came down and lost all that weight, that's the only time I got a way they can touch me. Before that, they couldn't touch me.
What does that feel like?
It just feel like I'll tell you what, Brian Kenny got on ESPN the night before I fought John Ruiz, and he explained it best. He said, and you can go back and look it up. He said, either Roy Jones is disillusional or he's the most confident athlete I've ever seen. Brian Kenny said that on ESPN the night before I fought, May 2nd, before I fought the 3rd. And I saw it, but I knew what he was talking about, and that's what it is. When you feel like that, it's like how Steph Curry feel like he can't miss a three-pointer right now. Mm-hmm. You understand me? He said, if you let him get an open shot, he's not going to miss it. That's that confidence. So for me, when I was like that, I was like, what they gonna do? They're not passing me. They're not smarter than me. They don't have the shock and explosion in their punches that I have. And they can't really even hit me. How they gonna beat me and I can hit them? How they gonna beat me? They couldn't. And that's just what it was. I had so much. And I was such a master of the game by the grace of God. And you know, my father taught me a lot, you know, and I learned a lot on top of what I was taught. So I had drills and drills and drills and drills, hours and hours and hours, days, weeks, months of doing the same thing. How you gonna beat me? It wasn't no way.
You watch Canelo. You've seen him. You called many of his fights over at HBO. You look at Billy Joe Saunders. What can he do?
Well, for Billy Joe, it's about being able to survive, being able to take Canelo's punches. If you can take Canelo's punches and get into, try to get into his head where you make him want to kill you, because believe it or not, Billy Joe thrives when people want to kill him. That's why he's trying to agitate Canelo now. He thrives when he can make you telegraph your punches, because he's slick enough to make you miss by just enough that he can touch you. You understand me? And when he gets into fights where he can do that, he's usually good. Only problem is, I don't really think Canelo has that mindset that's going to allow him to do that. And now we're going to get, it's going to get tested though, because Canelo, he's going to make Canelo mad enough to where he almost getting mad enough now. That's why he keep playing the games. They like going to shake his hand. And he doing things to try to get up under Canelo's skin to make Canelo want to kill him now, because he knows that when he makes guys want to kill him, that's the best chance for him. That's the only way he was able to beat Eubank. That's the only way he was able to beat David Lemieux. He had both of them trying so hard to knock him out, because he's not known as a power puncher. But because they were trying so hard to get him, he took advantage of that. Now he can see everything they're throwing. And he has heart. And he's a game guy to the end. So far, he's had heart. So he's the kind of guy that, you know, you just got to know, but you can't let him get under your skin.
Transport 1996 Roy Jones to today. Put him in the ring with Canelo. What happens?
Really, I like Canelo a whole lot as a fighter. So it's like, I'm not going to be that guy. I felt the same way he felt. You feel me?
That's what I'm saying. Two guys that...
And I don't see nobody going to beat me. Yeah.
How would you fight him at your best? How you see what he can do? How would you fight him?
Well, it's kind of easy to... I mean, not easy, but it's kind of easy to figure out how you fight him. And this is why I'm saying that this boy, if he gets in a fight, going to be a good fight. The hardest two times he had in boxing was Floyd Mayweather and Errol Andre Lara. And what did both of them do? They boxed him and moved. So if you box him and move, you create problems for him. You understand me? Even in the second fight, he beat Triple G because Triple G asked for Mexican style. But when Triple G actually boxed and moving, Triple G was doing much better. But because you asked for Mexican style, you got no credit for boxing. Which you can't. You took yourself out of the boxing rim. You said, no, I want Mexican style against a Mexican. So he can't even give you Mexican style. You understand me? You did good with it, to be honest with you. But we couldn't give you credit for it because you asked for Mexican style. You understand me? So guys that box him, give him a harder time. You understand where I'm coming from? And that would be, like I say, Floyd Mayweather Jr. and Errol Andre Lara. And what was Roy Jones Jr.? The best boxer, better than both of them. So it's quite natural it was going to be a problem for him.
I respect you not being that guy. Like Sugar Ray Leonard, too, whenever people would ask him about Floyd, he'd be like, I'm not that, you know, why are we answering that? Like, I believe in myself. What am I going to say? I wouldn't win? Like, but it's, you know, it's one of those debates.
No, it's not. What? He won't tell you the truth, but no, it's not a debate.
Well, no, it's not a debate, but it's what people want to talk about. There's no upside for him.
It's not a debate whatsoever.
Ray.
Dude, what? Yeah. Ray is a dog.
I know.
You understand me? Yeah. They underestimate him because of his nice personality and his nice disposition. No. They do not want that dude right there. And not in his prime, they don't. I don't care what they say. They could not mess with that dude in his prime. They ain't never seen nothing like that dude in his prime. They ain't seen nothing in their weight class, in a weight class above or below them, in their prime, that was close to what Ray was in his prime. And that's just that. And I can say it because I ain't none of Ray. They could not touch Ray. Trust what I tell you. I'd bet my whole life. And if you bring him back prime to prime, I'm going to bet on Ray Leonard. My life and my kids.
Right.
That ain't just joking. And I ain't got to hate. That's just what the truth is, because I seen that with myself. I done seen Ray in the trenches. I done seen Ray with the eye closed and couldn't see out of it. And Dundee telling me you're blowing the sun. And what Ray get up and go show out his heart. He's proven.
Right. I could do this for hours, but you've been traveling around the world the last few days. I appreciate you taking some time and talking to me, man. Glad to have you back in the broadcasting biz, too, as well. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, brother. I hope I can make it. Hope I can manage to... give people the same insight I used to give. I used to be pretty good at giving insight. Hope I still got the eye for it. I've been out for a long time.
It's good. It's like riding a bike, man.
Yeah, it's a good fight, but it's a good fight with two good fighters. You know, it's like I love both of these guys as far as their boxing ability, you know. Billy Joe, my fighter wants him bad now, so I got to pay attention
to
him.
Chris Eubank wants a piece of him.
Billy Joe bad.
Tell him, what's he betting 10 grand on? What's he betting 10 grand on this fight
that's,
for?
That's their personal thing, but he really wants him pretty bad, so now I got to watch him and figure out how we're going to beat him.
So you have a dual role in
this.
I
got
a
dual role.
You got a little scouting.
Yeah. Actually, he want both of them, though, so I got to kind of watch both of them because he giving me a hard task. Mm-hmm. So
65,000 in the building tomorrow.
I got to pay attention to both of them and see what we get because he wants either one of them. Mm-hmm. Canelo City wants to go to UK. There it is. Mm-hmm. And Eubank and Billy Joe Saunders is always going to be a beautiful fight in the UK. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we got first deals on both of them.
Roy, I appreciate your time, man.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. My thanks to my guests. As always, subscribe to the podcast over at Apple Podcasts. Rate, review. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.